Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
We thought of here on this Thursday it was time to bring a Hall of Famer onto the show. Why not? Let's start the show off with a bang. Let's do that. Let's bring in what's soon to be the newest member of Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, Terry Crisp. Crispy is on the line. Terry, how you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. I can see with that introduction, you guys are going stir crazy. It's got to you.
No, we're asking for money. We're asking for a
you're
loan.
You're losing it. You're losing it, guys.
Look, you know how it works. Butter them up. There's something we're going to be asking for, right?
Oh, yeah. Here it comes. It's coming.
I've got to be honest. I don't know if you've seen what I tweeted out the other night. I included you on Twitter. I don't know how active if you look at that stuff. But I am going through the channels looking for something. I stumble upon NBC Sports Network, and lo and behold, they are showing, let's go back to 1974, Stanley Cup Final, Game 6. I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh, wow, Flyers and Bruins. Cool. And I was more intrigued at the moment at the – my first thought was just, you know, look how these – look at the uniforms, look at the padding or lack of, no helmets, you know, just how the game was played back then. And then I immediately went, wait a minute, well, that's right, Crispy's on that team. And it was it 2 minutes later, they go up to a bench shot, and there's Terry Crisp. I don't know if you were delivering a speech, if you were yelling at somebody, Crispy, but it was fantastic.
Probably a little of both when you Sheila and I got a call from David Beauclair. We didn't realize it was on either. We watched about the last 6-7 minutes of it. Sheila and I were laughing. And when that came on, she said, "Were you yapping again?" I said, "Well, Freddie and I talked quite a bit on the bench because, you know, if you're not getting a lot of ice time, you got to do something. You got to talk to somebody." And at that given time, we were discussing late in the game. I was, at least, voicing my opinion, solicited or not, as to what should happen. And then Freddie, the last time he bent over and whispered in my ear was, he says, "Bobby Orr is coming out of the penalty box, and he says, he's your man." Well, you ever see your life flash before your eyes? You're winning 1-0. And Bobby Orr is coming out of the penalty box, and the coach says, "He's yours." So he put me on the ice. I think I was on for the last minute and 15 or whatever. But I'll tell you one thing. While I was on the ice, I had no idea where the puck was. I had no idea where the players were. But I sure as heck knew where the penalty box was and where Bobby Orr was sitting. And knowing when that shoot opened up, it was like a rodeo going to happen. The bull was coming out of the pen, and the bull was mine. Ay, ay, ay.
It was your job to lasso him, right?
Yeah. Everybody says they're happy when it is. I was the happiest guy in the hockey world when that buzzer went.
What is that like, Terry? You went through it multiple times. You went through it as a player and a coach. But those final seconds and to know you've done it all, you've crossed the finish line, what is that like? And what are those final seconds like before you get to zero?
You don't even realize it. You're watching the clock. You're watching the play, depending whether you're the coach or the player or whatever. And if you're winning, you're always thinking, depending on the lead you have, well, the 1-0, is that other shoe going to drop? Is this going to be a fluke goal, going to kill us? Or are we going to hang on, get another one? These are all flashing through your mind. And if you're the leader, you think that somebody's fooling around with the clock in the penalty box, slowing it down. And if you're the guy behind, you're thinking, hey, that guy over there has got his finger on a fast motion thing, and that clock's going too fast. So depending on whose bull's getting gored, and you're watching that clock, believe me, you are watching and waiting for it, whether you're winning or losing on it. And then when the final buzzer, especially that game, we were the first expansion team to ever win the Stanley Cup, the Flyers, that given year. And, you know, the first thing that goes through your mind is, remember I've told you this before, I can always remember my first game in the NHL. And I always said my first game was one of the greatest because I could say to my parents, for all they'd put into it, their efforts and their practice time and travel is, I played one game in the NHL. Then you get greedy and you want a little more, you want another game. But when the final buzzer goes and you've won the Stanley Cup for the first time, and knowing how hard it is to win it, and will you ever get another crack at it, and that goes through your mind again, the pinnacle of, And when that buzzer went that time, I went down and was heading towards where Sheila, my wife, and my mom and dad and some other relatives were sitting at the far end of the rink. I went down there. That just happened where the puck was. And the linesman had the puck. So if you watch, you'll see me get the puck from the linesman, which I still have the puck.
Oh, wow.
But I was giving Sheila and them the thumbs up sign, meaning we did it together. We made the pinnacle. We've arrived at the top of the mountain together. And I was so happy for them and me. And by the time that all happened, I couldn't get back near the cup. If you saw the aftermath, the fans on the ice,
how crazy was that?
Did you stay? That was crazy. I mean, that was literally crazy. Try that today and you'd club to death. You'd be in jail for it. It's unbelievable.
I mean,
and the funniest thing is, guys, and if you ever get a chance to watch it, and I didn't even notice it until my grandchildren, our grandchildren, said, "Hey, Coach, who was that kid in the line with you shaking hands at the Boston Bruins?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Go back, look at that." So I bounced. Pete Weber probably found it for me. He said, "Here was this kid in our line walking along with us, shaking hands with the Boston Bruins with a bottle of champagne." To this day, we have no clue who the kid was. None.
Oh, my gosh. And that guy's been telling that story his entire life.
I'm telling you, he can because it's so plain. You can see his face. You can see everything. And he can say, "Yep, I was there shaking hands with Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, all the boys."
Well, I mean, could you imagine today if what happened with you guys? If that happened today, what in the world the reaction would be?
I don't know because none of us noticed. I mean, we're all caught up in the euphoria. You know?
Right.
And then to go back and look at that and see it, you know, then we never even got a chance like to skate the puck around. You can see Bobby Clark and Bernie Perrant carrying the puck, trying to move with it. Hell, they had problems just getting off the ice into the dressing room with it. And then after that, and I heard Bernie Perrant being interviewed about this, and I realized what he was talking about it. Our dressing room was packed with people. Couldn't move. Like, I don't know who they were, where they come from, how they got in there. But you take away all the relatives and all the wives, it was like a free-for-all. Nobody, there was no guard. It was just, hey, everybody celebrate. Let's go. It's on.
You know, Terry Crisp on the line with us, you bringing that up when watching that, because I did not remember that, obviously, at all, until seeing that play out. The first thing I thought of was the Hank Aaron home run, right? I mean, we see that clip over and over again, and, you know, what do we see? We see fans out on the field running the bases with him, shaking his hand.
Well, he's not even finished yet.
They're not waiting at home plate. They're running the base with him, shaking his hand.
Think what you just said there, that those guys that did that, they'll have that always on film the rest of it, tell their children or grandchildren, "Yep, that's me right there. I'm running alongside him. See us rounding the base? That's me." They said, and they'll ask, "How'd you get there?" "I don't know. I don't know how I got there. I just got there."
We have Elliot Friedman on every Thursday at 1 o'clock, and last week I don't even know how we were kind of wrapping up with this, but Elliot was just kind of – we were just kind of maybe reflecting at this market and, gosh, can't believe it's been 22 years and where it was then and where it is today. And Elliot, I'll give him credit because we obviously jumped right in there and said, you are 100% correct, and you should always tell people that because it's true. But, you know, we were talking about how this market – to where it is today, you can't tell the story without including you and Pete because you guys were a big part of kind of bringing this market along and teaching a lot of bozos like me and Willie and a cast of thousands that never grew up with it, were never around it, didn't play it, you know, what this sport was all about. And so what about you? I know you've told the story of how you got here and you did the games with Pete, Jerry Helper, and you were done, and it's a great story if people haven't heard it. But what about those early days? And we were joking with Elliot about the media skate that Barry Trotz and Brent Peterson did for us jokers, and they put us through like a practice, and one of the hotshot media members who could skate got hurt because he was showing off and ran into the pipes and had to be carted off the ice. So they never did that again, Crispy. I think that was in 1998. They never did it. They did it one time, and that was it. But
yeah.
What was that like for you guys to not only to step away from the television and radio booth, and when there wasn't games, be out in the community and talking with people?
It was awesome. You know what? It was for Pete and I and Jerry Helper and our formative people who were there helping us. It was just fun for us because two areas. We knew we had to do it. We had to make the market and get to talk to people. And secondly, for us, it was fun just to try and teach, like, what's an offside and what's an icing and what's a checking. And Pete and I, we would, one year we did the caravan. And you've heard me tell this story real quickly. We were way down somewhere, have nowhere, little town, Podunky town, and we were meeting people at the Dairy Queen, and we were coming, and then we got to the Dairy Queen. There was four people there, and we get off the bus and walked in with our stuff on and our pens and everything, but waiting for the crowd on the floor. They looked at us and said, oh, you guys know. We thought the Titans were coming. So, and out the door they go. Pete and I had a Dairy Queen. Pete and I had a Dairy Queen, talk to each other, go back in the bus, and away we went. But I think the best part was that when we used to hold, if you, Willie, and you guys didn't know that tower at the Bridgestone up there, that where they have the radio highway 101 or whatever it is now.
Right.
We used to hold, there was a conference room up there, and I remember our first few sessions. One time we had 8 people, or maybe 10. And if there was 10 people there, 7 of them were ladies interested in hockey. And Pete and I learned early that, you know what, if this is going to go, the ladies are going to make this go. They're going to be a big part of our success here because they're the ones interested. They're the ones going to bring the husbands and brothers, et cetera. And I'll tell you right now, lo and behold, to this day, our best fans are the lady fans, the most avid, the most loyal. Hey, nothing against you guys out there. Don't get excited and get your yours or not. But the women are avid fans, and we learned that early.
Talking to Terry Crisp, telling a little story here and there, and, of course, he'll be going into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. Crispy, just sort of connecting what Darren was asking you about, you had, along with Pete, you had to have that personal touch to be able to make a connection with the fans, almost, you know, one by one. And over time, you know, the numbers continued to grow. But that's one thing I learned about your teams in Philadelphia. There was a really special relationship that you guys had with the fans. So it probably wasn't as strange to you that they were all in your locker room on the ice after the game because you were sort of on the level with the fans a lot. That's a big part of that story, isn't it?
Yeah, they were. You know what? When we walked out of the dressing room, after every game, we were right with the fans. I mean, we walked 2 feet from them, and win or lose, they either loved us, hated us, whatever, because you know the Flyer fans, they were loyal, but they were, you had to win for them. They wanted winning. But you could stop and talk and meet the kids and talk to the wife or whoever it was going along and on your way to your car. And that was a big part of it. And to me, growing our game, that way was St. Louis, the same way when we were originals in St. Louis, on the island. When we'd go out after games, we'd all stand around and talk with the people, and Sheila and I would greet them and whatnot, and all the players would, and when you went social, you stopped. The fans were part of it, and they're part of your family, and they felt part of it. And now it sort of discourages me a little bit when I see the rules that the NHL has to put in place and put them in place where the players can't be with them, et cetera, and they've made so many laws and rules that you lose that feeling. You lose that camaraderie. And I'll tell you what made it come home to, we have this deal, and Willie, you've been in on it, you and Chris Mason and then what, and Brent Peterson, where they sell, each year they auction off a meeting in the dressing room, a meal, a dinner, and a real first-class dinner, by the way, with our chefs there. In the dressing room, the team will be on the road, they'll clear, it'll be all nice and that, and Brett and I and a pizza round, and you have like, I think maybe 10 people come to it. And we've done a couple, and it's the greatest fun night. They bring the kids with them or them. We watch a game that's on the road. You guys are on the road, Willie, and we listen and watch. And they ask questions. We give them play-by-play. We answer all of them. It's one of the best things we do, but it brings back old-time memories for me of when you were close and could get close and could buddy up without problems or whatever. And I think that's a big part of the sporting world.
I've watched a lot of these older games. If you look at NHL Network, they've been showing a lot of the classic games, games that decide the Stanley Cup. And I really enjoy going back and watching the old games, watching how the game has evolved. So, Crispy, a lot of people always point to, you know, the fact that there was a lot of fights. I mean, your guys, the Broad Street Bullies, we know all of the great stories there. But when you watch an old game, what do you appreciate about the way the game was played back then? What's something that jumps out to you besides the toughness, the fighting? Is there anything that you think is almost a lost art these days?
Yeah, I do, but you're going to think I'm crazy. You think I'm going to be crazy and do it. But I think the new rules in our game have taken away a lot of our game. And I know people say, well, we wanted to get faster. We wanted to get more movement. We wanted to get more goals scored. We wanted more of this and more attack and all. You name it, and they'll throw that out at you. But back then, you were allowed to play. You don't have the ticky-tacky calls we have now. When a guy reaches and taps a guy on the stick or the glove hand with a tap and he gets 2 minutes for it. I know the ref has to call it. It's in the rule book. But I think we've almost put rules and ruled ourselves out of what hockey was meant to be. And hockey is a contact sport. It always has been, and I hope always will be. But legally, legitimately. But you're going to get hit, and you're going to give hits and receive hits. And in today's game, I know they're faster, the athletes today. They're faster and stronger and quicker and whatnot. But still, I wish that there was not so many penalty calls that are calling to take away the body work, legal body work, good solid hits and whatnot. And that's when I watched that last game there, I thought, oh, man, if the referees today, we'd all be in jail. I mean, we'd have been handcuffed, taken out and gone, and you'd end the
game. Yeah, and you're not talking about fights, right? You're talking about just what they allowed one-on-one to go on, right?
And grab them and roll them and tackle them and whatever it took back then. Yeah, that was what was hockey. Not that the fans loved, and they came to see it was whatever. And I just think today's game, it's a beautiful game, a wonderful game. But when I watched a few of those games when we played the Bruins And the funny part is, they all say the Broad Street Bullies, meaning the Philadelphia Flyers. Back in that era, nobody seemed to call the big, bad, brawling Bruins, who were just as miserable and just as mean as Philadelphia was, but never seemed to get the notoriety that we did.
Now, I want to get you to tell this story, Crispy. I'm not going to have you mention the name of the player unless you want to, but this is a great Crispy story that I've heard to me that kind of spells out what kind of guy Crispy is. Tell the story, Crispy, about you could get along with anybody on your team, and you felt like there was a conspiracy that they would stick you with the same roommate every time on the road, and it was a guy that had some personal habits of smoking and stuff that maybe nobody else wanted to room with, but they knew you were nice enough to be able to get along with the guy. Tell that story.
I will. It was one of the I loved him. Big, strong guy. That's why I loved him, because on the ice, he's big, strong, miserable, and he was my protector. So nobody got near me, and I made sure. But anyway, yeah, he loved to smoke. And back then, guys smoked. This is unbelievable. But I tell people, we had guys in our teams that go in between periods, would go in the bathroom, have a couple cigarettes, come back out, and go on the ice. I mean, good players. They weren't stumble bums. They were and this was one of them. But he would smoke, and I'd be as... When I room with him, he'd get up like 6:30 in the morning and open the window and sit there, puff away on a cigarette and watch Popeye cartoons on TV. the guy said, we're not rooming with him. He was my buddy, so I didn't mind rooming with him. So every road trip, Freddie said, okay, you put the names in a hat, because he wanted all the guys to mingle and wanted all the guys to be, you know, get to know each other. And that way on the road, you didn't have the same roommate. You had different roommate, which was smart. But every time when they'd pull a name out and they'd say, okay, Clarkie. And then they'd pull out Kinderchuk. Okay, Clarkie and Kinderchuk, your roommates for this road trip. And they'd go on down the line doing that. And about halfway, they'd pull out one, Crispy. And they'd pull out my buddy's name, Bingo. They say, "Your roommates." And he came to me. He says, "Hey, Crispy, huh? It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's crazy. We're always picked together, and we're always roommates. That's unbelievable." I said, "Yeah, it's really, it's, you know, it's unbelievable." He never knew our names were never in the hat. we never made the hat. But I loved him, and he was great. So, but that's how sports goes. We never made the hat.
Can you believe that, Terry? Again! How did we do this?
Can you believe it?
It's amazing!
It's unbelievable!
It's like it was meant to be!
Crispy, Terry Crisp with us. I told these guys yesterday that how I have my music set up on my phone when I'm driving around in the car, it's just a lot of times I listen on shuffle, and when I try and pull something up on my computer, it automatically adds it to my music. So the other day I'm out and I'm running some errands, and Pete Weber likes to send me things to listen to from over the years, different radio calls. And I'm driving along, and you know, music's on, and then it goes to the next song, and all of a sudden I hear you tell me something about Cale Hulse that I didn't know, trying to break down a play. And when I did, you know what I'm talking about, soccer.
I know exactly. Pete loves that one. That is
Pete, it's his favorite.
Bubba's favorite story, and it's when we're not on the air now. It comes out. It's humorous, but it's so humorous that we took the headsets off, and all you could hear over the air was the sound of blades. We couldn't get it under control, and it's just one of those faux pas you have where it wasn't really terrible, but it was a little bit of a censored word. And it just popped out of nowhere. And thank God we were allowed then the odd mistake, and they forgave you, and you moved on, and you apologized and moved on. But it still is funny. Pete and I, to this day, we look at each other. When that one pops up, we start to giggle.
So I did a story last year for our Preds profiles where we were talking about how you and Pete got here and that all came to be. And I set it up with sometimes when you're doing live radio, and this – or live TV, it happens that you have a misspeak. You're trying to say one thing, but something else comes out, and that's what this situation was. You were breaking down the play, because at the time, people may not remember, you simulcast, so it was on TV and radio all at the same time, and so you're having to do it for both, that you have the video on TV, but you have to be descriptive enough that it translates over radio. So the puck had gone into the corner, and Cale Hulse is trying to clear it, and you're trying to say that he soccer kicked it, and another word came out.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's one of those legendary stories. But how many of those moments can you recall that you can actually say on radio have happened that created some of that chemistry between you and Pete?
A few of them, but you know, like some were harmless, thank God. Like when Dan Hamhuis first joined us. And a play was going on, and he made a pass, and I said, "Well, that damn Hamhuis." And Pete says, no, Petey. No, Crispy. I think he's okay. He's not a bad guy." And I meant to say, "Dan Hamhuis." I said, "That damn Hamhuis." Pete says, no, Crispy, it's okay. He's a nice guy. We like him." Okay. And Pete one time, and this is, I don't know if you're allowed to say the SH word, but one of our defensemen took a shot, and his stick just exploded, the stick, when he took the shot. And Pete says, "Holy," he says, "so-and-so's," you know, the other word is rhymes almost with sticks, is, "oh," he says, "his bingo just exploded." And I looked at him and said, "Really? Hey, that's a mess." So there's certain cover-ups that we've had that Pete and I have got away with and done it. And you guys know, you guys better than anybody, Pete Weber has all of these on tape. So don't ever get Pete Weber mad at you.
No.
Because he can bury you in a hurry.
Oh, I send him stuff. Or he'll hear it and he'll text me. He goes, "I need that. I need that for my reel."
He has got that forever and a day. They're on. He has the best collection of faux pas. And like that Elia guy in baseball, the one in... When the one with the guy throws the phone, the baseball guy. Those baseball guys are a little demonstrative, aren't they? They're a little expressive. Holy.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, if I want to jump up and down and hug my players, I'll jump up and down and hug my players.
Tommy Lasorda.
You guys,
there's a whole reel just by itself for Tommy Lasorda.
You guys have heard them all. Most of the sports fans have.
And what people don't realize, you and Pete, I guess you had crossed paths, but you didn't really know each other before you came here, right?
Well, yeah, Pete said he had interviewed me once before, and I didn't remember it. He says he did. So I said to him, well, then you must have been a poor interviewer, Pete, because I don't remember you. He says, you know, like he gave me like, yeah, okay. I guess when I was coaching. But when I got to sit down beside him, when I first came, I say this with all due and sincere respect, is that I was probably the luckiest broadcaster in sports to be able to sit down beside Pete Weber. As you all know, and the fans probably know, he has a photographic memory for every sport, everything. Like the three men, I'm going to give a shout out. I'm allowed. Three of the men that I have worked with that are unbelievable at this, that if I ever had to pick, it'd be one of these three every time. Pete Weber, Eli Gold, and Willie Donick are the three men that I listen to, I've worked with, that have memories that are unbelievable in the sporting world and can recall stuff, not in just one sport, but all the sports. So if people are listening to broadcasters and whatnot, yeah, a lot of them are great and good, but if you want three of the best that I've ever heard, it's Petey, Eli, and Willie that you talk sports with. You'll get everything you want to know from them.
Walking encyclopedias.
Yeah, thank you very much. I love that. That's why you get paid the big green, Darren.
And by the way, if Pete ever comes out with a book, we're all going to feel like another individual that we all know when Eli came out with a book. We'll be on pins and needles.
Oh, yeah.
Hotel rooms.
I love one. You guys know Bobby Plager, St. Louis Blues.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I played with Bobby. One of the funniest guys, most dangerous guys for jokes and hockey. And he said, he sends out an email, I think, to all the guys in the Blues one time. He says, hey, guys, I'm writing a book, and I'm going to tell it like it was. And I'm no holds barred. And he said, I'm going to get a lot of money for this book. But, he says, being a good teammate, I'm giving you guys a heads up. If each of you guys sends me $25,000 each, I won't write the book.
That sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
I'm not sure how much money he got.
That is a great story.
That was one of the best ever.
Oh, that is a fantastic story. There's the walk-off.
Only Bobby Plager.
No doubt. Hey, Terry, thanks as always. Good to hear your voice. You and Sheila continue to be safe, and hopefully we'll see you soon, but we'll certainly talk to you soon.
Thanks, fellas, for talking with me. And, yes, back to you too, guys, your families, you all stay safe and healthy. And to all of our fans and the people out there, please stay healthy and stay apart, and we will get through this, and we'll see you all at the rink. Bye for now.
Love it. Terry Crisp, the Hall of Famer, will come back, wrap up the first hour. By the way, Austin Watson at 11 o'clock to start the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.